Vrindaki Jaya.
Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopata Sayam Kundada Kunda Kiri Gopadan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturadam Kijai Navadeepdam Kijai Jagadatasami Kijai Yamanamai Kijai Shrimati Lasside Vikajoy Samaveda Bhakta Vrindaki Jai Gora Premananda Hari Guru. All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, Om Naganat, Timidanda Shah, Gananjana, Shlakaya, Chakshuran, Miditam, Yenatas, Mai, Shri Guruve Namaha. So, we're going to continue with our study of the Bhagavad Gita with chapter 3. And then, after we do the study of the Bhagavad Gita, I wanted to show some nice pictures that were made by Jagat Guru of the new temple. He's made some, like, virtual reality movies. Pretty good. Not as good as Avatar. But it's coming up there. I'm very, very happy with the result. So, in chapter 3 is called Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga basically means to connect to Krishna through work. The word yoga is often misunderstood. Many people think it means exercises. It is not a system of exercises. The exercises are part of yoga, but doing the exercises does not mean that one is a yogi. If one is a yogi, he may do exercises to help control the mind and focus the senses. But if one simply does exercises and doesn't have a spiritual goal, at least towards the Brahman effulgence, then he's not a yogi. We would call him a coach. You understand? Coach? You just have that word nowadays? Coach, or what other word do you have synonymous with coach? What? Trainer? Personal trainer. Mentor. What?
Mental?
Mentor, yeah, but personal trainer. Like if you go into the gymnasium here, you get a personal trainer to show you not what to do, what not to do. Similarly, with many of these yoga exercises, there's things you definitely don't want to do, especially at my age. You know, you have to be real careful about the exercise, or else you may not get out of a particular position. So yoga means to connect with the Supreme. The Supreme has three aspects: Brahman, the energy; Paramatma, the soul or super soul in the heart; and Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead who resides in the spiritual realm and who comes down in his various avatars to attract us to go back to him by his transcendental pastimes. Okay, so with that in mind, let's start with chapter 1. Chapter 3. Who wants to read verse 1? Volunteer. Gopal, you're not shy.
Arjuna said, Rajanarjuna, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare? If you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work.
So, we can see at this point that Arjuna is still looking for excuses. He's hearing what Krishna said in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and he's trying to take it in such a way that he doesn't have to do his duty in terms of fighting the battle of Kurukshetra. So the question is, second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna emphasized what's called Buddhi Yoga. It means the yoga of intelligence. And he emphasized that 10 times in the last 33 verses of chapter 2. And Arjuna is thinking, wow, this is great. Buddhi yoga, I can use my intelligence so I don't have to do a thing. Sorry, I almost used that word. A darn thing. So I don't have to do anything. This is great. I don't have to kill anyone. I just sit there and just get in the mental. And that'll be yoga for me. But he has a misunderstanding about what Buddha yoga is. He says, by that I will avoid the sin of killing my kinsmen. But Krishna has already explained what in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? That if you do your duty, there's no sin, right? And if you don't do your duty, what? That's sin. Or let's say vikarma. Vikarma means you'll get a bad reaction. Because that word sin is misused, overused, and used by the wrong people in the Western world, and also in India. Because if you say, you're a sinner, or I'm a sinner, people don't understand what that means. It means, basically, at least if one is following the rules and regulations of the Vedic literature, it means that one is acting against the injunctions of God. Okay. So Arjuna is thinking, I just want to sit there and meditate and think and engage in this nice Buddha yoga process that Krishna has given. So why is he asking me to fight in spite of that? You know, Krishna seems to be bewildering my mind. And you see that in the second verse. Who's going to read the second verse? Hrishikesh, why don't you read the second verse?
My intelligence is being
bewildered.
Bewildered by your original
equivocal
instruction. Therefore, please tell me distinctively which will be the more beneficial for me.
Now, and actually, Arjuna here, if we look at the word-by-word synonyms, is accusing Krishna of bewildering him. He's not only saying, I'm bewildered, he said, you're bewildering me. You're giving, and also he says, you're giving equivocal instructions. Wow, imagine saying that to God. Huh? You know, giving instructions really, you know, they mean two things, and you know, you don't really know what you're saying, God. Basically, equivocal. You understand? Equivocal, it's just like, huh? So he's not really understanding Krishna's message at this point. Okay. And so he's thinking renunciation means to give up work, but renunciation is not giving up work, but working, giving up the fruits of action, working properly under the Vedic injunctions. Renunciation is not a means of purification, it's the result of purification. In other words, what is renunciation? Let's take the Sanskrit word for renunciation. Does anyone know the Sanskrit word starts with a V? Vairagya. Now, ragya, it means to the passion, to enjoy this world. And vai means without it, just like you have the word vaikuntha. Kuntha means anxiety. And vaikuntha means what you get when you take Prozac, right? Everybody's listening? So that's an antidepressant, I know that. So vaikuntha means without anxiety. And so vairagya means without the desire to enjoy. But you can't give up the desire to rejoice and to enjoy this matter unless you get purified. And this karma yoga, nishkama karma yoga, is a means of purification, to give up the desire to enjoy something which is not enjoyable. So renunciation literally means to be nirapeksha, disinterested in things of this world, not negative towards things of this world. Oftentimes we see so-called sages or whatever, they're very negative towards things of this world, but that negativity is the opposite side of the same coin on which enjoyment or the desire to enjoyment, joy is. You understand? So it's the same thing. Like if you see someone really negative, that means they may be also frustrated because they couldn't get that thing. They say, oh, she wasn't a very attractive girl anyway. That's because she wouldn't have him. Or vice versa with men. Okay. So, text 3, who's going to read that?
The Supreme Personality of God has said, O sinless Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation, and others by devotional service.
So Arjuna is thinking, as we see in this nice slide, that they really go in two separate directions. And he wants the jnana stuff, so he doesn't have to do the karma. Karma means work in this particular context. So karma and jnana are not two separate processes, but they're two rungs, one above the other, on what we call the yoga ladder. A yoga ladder is a ladder with many different steps, and the topmost step is what step? Does anyone know? And Krishna says that in the 6th chapter. We're jumping ahead of ourselves. Yoginam api sarvesham, madgatinantaratmana, Shadavai Bhajataye Yomam Yoma Isame Yuktatavo Mataha. He says that of all these yogis, the best yogi is the bhakti yogi, one who thinks of me. So they're not two separate paths. They're both steps on the same path. So text 4. Let's have someone read it. In other words, just to paraphrase that, that if you're not purified and you give up your activities, external activities, and just engage in meditation, guess what happens? It'll be a disturbance in society. Why will it be a disturbance? Because you're going to give people the impression that you're an advanced spiritualist, whereas you're not. And then you're going to be doing all sorts of things on the sly. And you see this sometimes in different religions, not any particular religion, but in different religions where people take a position that they're not really ready for, and then they discover them later in the French Quarter in New Orleans or somewhere else. So retiring from fruitive activities doesn't make one situated on the transcendental platform, or as the Mayavadi say, as good as Narayan. Rather, one has to first purify themselves, realize their position through detached work. Like Prabhupada one time said that if someone on an immature platform went to Radhakund, I think everybody knows where Radhakund is. Radhakund is the topmost spiritual place anywhere. I mean, the Kund means lake. So the lake of Radharani is as dear to Krishna as Radharani herself is. So Prabhupada said if someone goes there and they're not ready, then that Radhakund becomes Narakakund for them. Naraka means like hell, because they're in hellish consciousness and they'll commit offenses in a holy dump. When Prabhupada took us first to Vrindavan and other holy places, he was very cautious in guiding us as to what we could do and what we could not do. And as Westerners, or as any, conditioned souls, we did things that were not really appropriate in the holy dham, like when devotees would go into Radhakund, they would chicken fight. You know what chicken fighting is? That means you put one devotee on top, or a person on top of your shoulders, and you fight. And they thought it was like a big swimming pool. And so one has to be ready to engage in the proper type of renunciation before they engage in it. Otherwise, it just disturbs society, creates confusion, and people lose their faith in the process of religion. So text 4, not merely by abstaining from work can one attain freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. So the question is, why can't we just renounce activities? The answer is given in text 5. Uh-oh. Does it look like anyone you know? Not the left picture, the right picture. Anyway, so text 5. So who's going to read that?
Everyone is supposed to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment.
So even if you try to refrain from acting, the modes of nature which are in constant struggle for control of your consciousness, control of your activities, will force you to act, even if it's just action subtly or action in the mind. So you have a choice. You can either act for God or act like a dog or a cat. See, Gopal, there's Catwoman. It's one of Gopal's heroes. So the soul... So the soul is always active. And according to one's eligibility, adhikar, position, one has to take a particular or assume a particular situation or a particular type of activity either on karma or jnana if they're not going to take up bhakti. Now later on we'll learn if one takes up bhakti, one doesn't have to go through these preliminary stages. But one has to understand where they are at. And not jump artificially, prematurely to a platform which would cause a disturbance to themselves and to others. So premature, this is a nice warning, premature renunciation of karma and the jumping to the platform of jnana renunciation will cause a lot of difficulties, and we'll see why in a second. Not to criticize them, they're probably great devotees, but your activities must match the dress that you have. I remember many times I've been in the Holy Dham, and one time I was circumambulating a temple. It was the Chakaleshwar Mahadev temple, which is right in the Manasiganga area. And as I was circumambulating, I met these particular individuals, nice people, and they said, "Oh, Maharaj, would you like some prasad?" And this is the prasad they were offering me. No, but it looks exactly the same. So I was thinking, how can I be nice to them? You know, because there's hospitality. The guest has to, you know, accept the host's hospitality. So I said, not today, it's Ekadashi. Fortunately for me, it was Ekadashi. So, okay, text 7. Who's going to read text 7? Act 6, we didn't read. Someone should read 6 first. What? Let her read it.
One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender.
Okay. And text, we already saw that what happened with text 6 in the previous slide. So, text 7.
On the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses of his mind and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment to the impact of
security. Yeah, Prabhupada said it's better to be an honest street sweeper than a false renunciant. So, you know, honesty with yourself and honesty with others. So it's a sincere, dutiful householder performing nishkama karma yoga is better than a false renunciant. And many times people take up the guise of false renunciants just to make a living. But Prabhupada told the story of one neighbor he had when he was a young man. And Prabhupada was married and he worked selling pharmaceuticals. But his neighbor, during the day, would dress as a sannyasi, and he would go out and collect money. And then during the night, he would put on his white dhoti and, you know, say hello to his wife. So he would come home at night with the upper cloth, which is meant for collecting different goods like money and grains and everything like that. He'd say hello to his wife, change clothes, and Prabhupada said, "This is a pretender." So there's many people like that. I mean, not just in India, all over the world we find pretenders. So text 8. So Krishna there is confirming that nishkama karma yoga is your eligibility, is your adhikar, it is part of your dharma. And these prescribed duties which meet both material needs and spiritual needs are actually a benefit to society and also benefit oneself and one's physical well-being and mental well-being. Because as Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions, he's a great acharya in our sampradaya, he mentions in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita that people have material needs as well as spiritual needs. So we should be aware of these needs. Material needs means need for air, for light, for friendship, for joy. And then the spiritual needs are things like need for self-realization, understanding the absolute, need to connect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So both of these types of needs need to be met if one is going to be stable and a benefit to society and a benefit to himself. But Arjuna is still thinking, if I work, I will create reactions and develop attachments and new desires. I'm going to be in trouble. But then Krishna reassures him in the next verse, text 9.
Work then as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work can be
what causes bondage in the real world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free from bondage.
So here, Arjuna is being reassured by Krishna that you're not going to become more entangled by engaging in Nishkama Karma Yoga. It's not ordinary work. This not Nishkama Karma Yoga, that is work without desire, acting under the direction of the Supreme Personality of God, without desire for the results, will lead to liberation. And ordinary work results in entanglement in the three modes of material nature. So Krishna here stresses that Nishkama Karma Yoga done in knowledge of Vishnu is superior. So here is he's beginning to point out a little devotion. It's superior to Nishkama Karma Yoga done just in jnana. In other words, jnana means basically the desire to get liberated or freed from the inebrieties of this world or to acquire knowledge. And Arjuna is thinking, what if I'm still overly attached and cannot perform Nishkama Karma Yoga? And then Krishna answers, then start on the platform of karma kanda and gradually rise up. So what is karma kanda? Karma kanda basically is a part of the Vedic literatures whereby one can acquire material things or do sacrifices or prayers or mantras for material things, and gradually they'll become elevated because they're recognizing the supremacy of Lord Krishna. So text 10 to 16 leads us on the path from karma kanda, the path of just being interested in acquiring things in this world, to karma yoga, connecting to Krishna through karma yoga. So in text 10, 11, and 12, actually we should read them. Let's read text 10.
In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth the generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, "Be thou happy by this yajna, sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation."
And then 11, 12, they're both together. Who can read 11 and 12? Rain for all. And finally, 12.
In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief.
So here Krishna is giving the benefits for Vedic enjoyment. In other words, the karma kanda process. If you really want to enjoy this world, here's a process whereby you can attempt to enjoy this world short term. It's a short term enjoyment, but at least it's religious, as we see down here, and it's not sinful. It's purifying because you're recognizing the supremacy of Krishna. In fact, in the Karma Kanda rituals, or in the Vedic rituals, in the four Vedas, like the Samaveda, Yajurveda, Tharva Veda, there's recognition of Vishnu being the supreme. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Pada Pashanti Yat Suryaha. That all the demigods, they're looking to Vishnu. That's right from the Rig Veda. That's a famous mantra from the Rig Veda. So that's the benefit. And 13, 14, and 15. So we read these three.
The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment barely eat only sin.
14. Text 14.
All living bodies subsist on food grains which are produced from rains. The grains are produced by performance of yajna sacrifice. And yajna is born for prescribed duties.
And text 15.
Regulated activities are described in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of God. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in the acts of sacrifice.
So this is recognition that everything we have, all the things we need to live, come from someone, and ultimately they come from Krishna, but through the demigods. And therefore, if we want to enjoy, just like if you want to own something, you have to pay the price, right? If you steal something, you're a thief, and then you're culpable, and you can be put in jail. So in the cosmic scheme, if you have air, here's air. We're all breathing air, right? So who pays for it? What do they say? Air is free? But it's not free. Because if you breathe the air, if you eat food, anything you do, you owe someone something for it. You owe the demigods directly and Krishna ultimately. So therefore, the sacrifice that one performs in different ages is different. And in this age, as Prabhupada points out in his purport, the most simple and most effective form of sacrifice is called Sankirtan. Sankirtan means the congregational chanting of the Lord's holy names. And this satisfies even the demigods. You don't have to separately worship the demigods. And even if the demigods were to get upset because you're not doing the puja to them, then Krishna will protect you, like he did the residents of Vrindavan, as we see behind me, right? Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill because he made Indra very angry. He told the residents of Vrindavan, don't worship Indra. You know, as far as the rain is concerned, you know, Indra just has to do his duty. If you act good, the rain's going to come anyway. Who cares about this Indra? So he made Indra very angry, and Indra tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan, and Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. So if you don't worship the demigods and you worship Krishna, Krishna will personally protect you from whatever anger they have because you're now, and they won't be angry. They'll be very pleased because the demigods are suras, they're devotees. So, text 16.
My dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice as established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain.
Okay, vain means there's no purpose in life. And also it further entangles him in the material world. And one who engages in sinful activity goes downward to lower species of life. Just like you see this nice romantic picture. I mean, it's not my favorite picture. So these people will most likely become trees in the next life. That's not sad. Unless they start chanting Hare Krishna. But it's not very likely. So this is not, because if one really wants to live his life for the satisfaction of the senses, the human body is not the best body for that. Prabhupada many times said that. Of course, there's this famous verse that Lord Vishavadev speaks in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Nayam deho deha bhajam ri loke kashtam kamam arhite vidbhujam ye tapo divyam putrukayene satvam shudyad yajmad Brahmashokra Churantam. He says, my dear sons, he's addressing his sons, you should not try for the same happiness that the stool eaters have. And that's referring to pigs, if you didn't know. That's what pigs eat. Anyway, so you should try for transcendental happiness by engaging in austerities. So, therefore, Krishna is very kind. If you just want to enjoy the senses, let me get rid of this picture for a second. I'm not that, I don't want to keep looking at it. It was sannyasi. So if you just want to enjoy the senses, Krishna will give you a nice body whereby you can fully enjoy. You understand? Like a tiger's body, pigeon's body, nice body. Because they can enjoy their senses in more, let's say, deeper. It's much more pleasant because the senses of animals, different animals, are much stronger than human beings. Like a dog's nose is so strong, he can smell something like miles away. That's why they use dogs in the customs to smell if someone has some contraband. They don't use a human being. you know, isn't it? You've never seen a human being go because the sense of smell, his nose is very strong. So here's a depiction of the yoga ladder, just to go over this. And not all these steps are yoga steps, But there are steps below the yoga ladder. Some steps are below the yoga ladder, like animal life is not on the yoga ladder. And then after that, you got karmakanda, human life. Karmakanda means to follow the Vedic path for sense enjoyment. Then you're starting up the ladder. And then after that, you accept that there's a transcendental goal of life. You go to karma yoga or nishkama karma yoga. And also there's another type of karma yoga, which is called sakama, which we didn't discuss before. Sakama means you're doing karma yoga, but you want some benefit out of it. It's not nishkam. Nishkam means you want nothing out of it. So who are some examples of people who are doing sa kama karma yoga? Yeah, some of the demigods. Not all of them. Some of them are pure devotees. Give me an example of a pure devotee. Brahma, who else? Yamaraj. He's a pure devotee, but you probably don't want to have his association at the time of death. So most of the demigods are what we call sakama devotees. They get in trouble from time. You know, they're devotees and they like chanting and everything. But Indra, you know, if he sees a sage's wife, like Ahalya, you know the story of Ahalya? Gautama Muni's wife, he sees her, he looks down, and he sees, wow. She could be mine. He forgets about his chanting, puts his japa bead to the side. Drop the bag to the side. And he says, I'm going to make myself look like Gautama Rishi. And so he takes on the guise of Gautama Rishi, walks into Gautama Rishi's house and says, hi, Ahalya. And she says, you look like Gautama Rishi, but you sure don't act like him. Anyway, she's attracted because she knows it's Indra. And then he walks out of the house after so-called enjoying his senses, and then the real Gautama Rishi pops in at the same time and does a double take. He says, huh? I'm there? Here? Where am I? And then he realizes that it's not twins. He realizes that it's Indra, and he curses Indra to lose his masculinity, and then his poor wife has to become disincarnated, like a stone. And she's later on saved by Lord Ram. Lord Ram puts his foot on her and she comes back into external existence. So that's the problem with Sakama Karma Yoga. That it's good, it's better than nothing, but you can run into a lot of trouble if you're not careful. So we recommend at least Nishkam Karma Yoga. And then after that, there's Jnana Yoga, that is cultivating knowledge or being attached to getting liberated from this world, which is generally the goal of Jnana Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga, some of you are familiar with that. You know, the different postures, Yam, Niyam, Asana, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. And of course, Patanjali, the authority in the Hatha Yoga system, says the purpose of all these things is to stop the turning, the vritti of the mind, and to worship God. That may come as a surprise to some of you yoga students, but he says the purpose is to ultimately, Ishwara, he uses the word Ishwara, which is a generic term for God. It's like in English, we have a generic term for God, that's God. And in Sanskrit, we have some generic terms and some personal terms, which are called primary or secondary names. What's an example of a generic name in Sanskrit of God? What? Paramatma, that's a generic name. Ishwara, which I just gave before. Bhagawan, yeah. And what's an example of a primary or a personal name of God?
Krishna.
Krishna. Govinda. Gopal. Yashomati Nandana. That's nice. Patanjali uses the word Ishwara, which is a generic name of God, which is good. He doesn't really talk about Krishna with two hands playing his flute in a threefold bending form. After Ashtanga Yoga, you can go to either Brahman realization, or sometimes they go to this Paramatma realization. Paramatma means to realize the Lord in the heart, and sometimes Ashtanga Yogis who are really expert see the Lord in the heart, and they get confused and they think, that's me. And that increases their false ego. I mean, imagine looking in your heart and seeing forearm Vishnu, really attractive. And you think, wow, that's me, I'm God. So that's one of the problems. And then ultimately, if you climb higher and higher, so you don't have to climb the whole ladder. You can actually take the elevator. And the elevator, of course, takes you to the topmost rung, which is bhakti yoga. And then you have Bhagavan realization, which is realization of the Supreme Personality of God and his personal features, activities, and qualities. So that's the yoga letter. So, surpassing, I'll just read it, the stages of karmakanda, which we just showed before, sakama, that's spelled wrong, it should be sakama karma yoga, and there shouldn't be an R there, you see, where the mistake is? It's not sakarma karma yoga. That wouldn't make sense. That means with work yoga. So sakama instead of sakarma would mean without desire karma yoga and with desire karma yoga and nishkama karma yoga without desire. A successful nishkama karma yogi may conclude that I have no more material desires, so I don't need to perform my prescribed duties for purification. This is an improper conclusion, which Krishna is trying to address here in the Bhagavad Gita. So what should such a person do? And Krishna answers this in text 17 to 35. We're going to go text by text through this. 17, 18, and 19. Who wants to read those?
But for one who takes pleasure in the shuttle, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the shuttle only, who is that is for him?
Okay, text 18.
A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duty, nor has he any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to depend on any other living being.
And text 19.
Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty, for by working without attachment, one attains the supreme.
So even if one is on that platform, a successful nishkama karma yogi, one is advised to act as a matter of duty. And then Krishna tells us in the 20th chapter, even a better reason for acting as if you weren't on that platform. And what is that reason? Who wants to read text 20?
Things such as Janaka attains perfection solely by performance of prescribed duty. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work.
So here, Krishna is talking about setting a good example, which he goes into in greater depth in the next text. The next text, text 21, says, I'll read this one. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So in other words, that's the verse, someone that has a position has a great responsibility to set an example for people in general. Because if he gives an example, even though he doesn't have to follow so strictly different Vedic rules and regulations, but if he gives people an excuse, if he gives people an inch, they will take a mile. And I'll tell an interesting story about that. One time, Srila Prabhupada, of course Prabhupada never did anything improper, but one time Prabhupada was on a plane, an airplane, and they offered Prabhupada a drink. It was called 7-Up. Siete arriba in Spanish. You speak Spanish. So Prabhupada said, what is this? And then they described to Prabhupada it was like some lemon juice and fizzy water and whatever, you know, sugar. And Prabhupada took it and said, very refreshing. And so then later on at the temple, they offered Prabhupada some 7-Up. So the devotees saw that. And Prabhupada, you know, he was just accepting it because he wanted to engage people, whatever. And later on, at the New York Temple, because the devotees took that example, there was a whole big 7-Up truck arrived in front of the temple. You know, one of those trucks, you know, with the two sides you fold up. You understand? You've seen those soft drink trucks? And they arrive with a big delivery, you know, and carted in all these cases of 7-Up to the temple. So people will take any sort of excuse to do things that may not be so helpful for their spiritual life. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with 7-Up. Please don't get me wrong. I'll get sued. But if you give people an inch, people will take a mile. So someone who is actually on a platform or in a position of responsibility has to be very careful for the sake of others to set a perfect example. So Krishna is saying in text 21 that if Arjuna goes to the forest, the people in general are going to follow his example, and they're less qualified than him, and they'll become degraded in the forest. I mean, we see, for example, in America, people go to the forest on vacation. What do they do in the forest? Hunting? Drinking?
Good stuff.
Good stuff, yeah. So here's our advocate for the Americans. So I'm an American, too. I can talk all that. But they do a lot of stuff that is really, we can't talk about. We really can't talk about because they're not purified. Whereas if a devotee goes to the forest, someone who's pure Krishna conscious, what will he do in the forest? He'll chant, even chant for the trees, chant for the animals, and he'll be very peaceful. But if you send someone to the forest who's not self-controlled, his mind will not be. If he's a Vaishya, what will he think of doing? Cutting the trees and selling them. You put a Vaishya, Vaishya means businessman, for those of you who don't know Sanskrit. So if you put a businessman anywhere, he'll try to sell and buy things. Right? As a Vaishya. And a Shudra will just try to grossly enjoy. He'll start tapping the trees. You know what tapping the trees are? Getting the sap from the trees and letting it ferment. Just like in Mayapur one time, there's an interesting story I just read. One devotee, I forgot his name, which devotee it was, but he didn't know that you're supposed to drink the sap from the trees early in the morning. Because if you drink it at noon, it's intoxication. So he drank it at noon and the whole room started spinning around him. So if someone goes to the forest and they're not qualified, that's what they'll do. Okay, so text 22 to 25 are also another set. So who wants to read them real quickly? And that's, we'll end it after that. Text 23.
If I ever fail to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, all parties, certainly all men, will fall in.
24.
If I did not perform prescribed duties, all these horrors would be put to the nation. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby restore the peace of all living beings.
And finally, text 25.
As the ignorant perform their duties with attachment to results, the learned may similarly act, or without attachment, for the sake of leading people on the right path.
So Krishna's giving more arguments. Krishna's saying that basically even he has to act to set a good example. He's God, but he acts, let's say in Dwarka, he acts as a perfect householder. If you read the Krishna book, Prabhupada's exposition on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll see that Krishna wakes up, what time in the morning? Brahma, it says when the cocks crow. And it's not talking about the chickens. It's talking about the peacocks. Woo, woo, like that. Not cock-a-doodle-doo. So when the peacocks crow, Krishna wakes up, even though he's lying in bed so nicely with his wives. How many wives does he have? 16,108. Pretty good. Even though he's lying in bed with his nice wives, attractive wives, he gets up and he starts meditating. And he does his morning program, right? Early in the morning. Of course, Krishna's meditation is on what?
Himself.
Himself. You should not do that. We know some people who like to meditate on their navel, but I don't find that so attractive. All right. Some people do find it attractive, but I don't. So Krishna's much more attractive. He plays the flute. Than my navel doesn't. And he has three... Other Krishna Priya can't believe what I'm saying. But threefold bending form, so many ecstatic pastimes of others. So anyway, Krishna sets a good example. And so should any person, even if they're perfected. And here Krishna is destroying the argument that Arjuna made in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, that if I fight, the family will be destroyed, and tradition will be destroyed because there'll be unwanted progeny and all that other stuff. So here Krishna says, if you follow your duty, you are going to be setting an example and you won't be destroying tradition because others will follow. You'll be the natural leader of society because people follow the leader. The majority of people are followers in any society. Just like you see in the elections nowadays, right? That... I can't believe why some people follow certain politicians. It's just like, huh? But somehow or other, and I'm not mentioning any particular politicians, it's just unbelievable that people follow certain stars, movie stars. I'm not talking about those stars. Movie stars, isn't it? Like if some big Bollywood star walks in the room, half the people here would swoon. They wouldn't even see me giving class anymore. I remember I was with one Bollywood star, Vivek Oberoi. I was sitting next to him. And here all the ladies were... and here I am sitting in sannyasi giving spiritual direction. It was like I didn't exist. So in modern society, people follow others who are not qualified spiritually. They follow. I mean, that's the problem. That's the real problem. So we need some real good role models. And we see that also in bringing up children. They need role models. Role models mean people you emulate in life. So I think we'll stop here because we've spoken for enough time. So we can take one or two questions. Not about meditating on the navel. Let's take another question. Someone else can ask a question. You can ask a question later. All right. We'll do it. So.
If someone takes to Bhakti Yoga, at the same time they does Karma Yoga, is this destination? What is that?
Well, if someone takes to Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga is automatically built into Bhakti Yoga. Karma Yoga means serving Krishna, connecting to Krishna through your activities. If you're a Bhakti Yogi, you're automatically serving Krishna through your activities with the additional factor of doing it out of love. That's the difference. And cultivating the love through the process of bhakti. The process of bhakti is the ninefold process beginning with hearing and chanting. So karma yoga is part of, it's contained within bhakti yoga. However, if you're doing karma yoga, it's not necessarily true that you're doing bhakti yoga. If you understand process of logic like syllogisms, if bhakti, automatically karma. Karma is contained. But it's not necessarily true. So if you know anything about Venn diagrams? Venn diagrams, okay. Little logic for you here. So let's say bhakti is a big circle. Karma yoga intersects that circle of bhakti yoga. So there's part of karma yoga that's outside of the circle of bhakti yoga and part that's inside. So in other words, there's karma yogis who are not doing bhakti yoga and there are karma yogis who are doing bhakti yoga. But if you are doing bhakti yoga automatically, that karma yoga is contained within bhakti yoga. Does that make sense? So the bhakti yogi is automatically doing nishkama karma yoga. Although his... kama, or desire, is to serve Krishna. So nishkama in terms of material kama, temporary desires of this world. So automatically nishkama karma yoga is contained within bhakti. Is that clear? Gopal?
Yes.
In text 15,
is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice.
So, the transcendence is all-pervading. Why is it eternally situated only in acts of sacrifice?
It doesn't say it's only situated. Does it say only? The word only? Is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. Because acts of sacrifice, according to the Beta Conjunction, always contain a connection with the transcendence.
But transcendence is all pervading. Yeah. Transcendence everywhere?
Yes, transcendence is everywhere. But you can't connect to it. Like, for example, there are radio waves and television waves that are in this room. But are you connected to them? Maybe. Are you wearing something in your ear? No. I've often, during our meetings, management meetings, I've often wanted to connect to the radio waves and television waves because they're quite boring. But hopefully no one is doing that now. But there's all sorts of things in this room that are pervading the room that we're not connected with at this point. Right?
So by performing acts of sacrifice,
there's GPS signals. There's radio waves, television waves. What else is there? Cell phone waves. And sometimes we become aware of them when someone's cell phone goes off. So what's the question?
So by performing acts of sacrifice, we become connected to that.
We become connected. And then by performing bhakti yoga, we become aware of the all-pervading. You can become connected without becoming aware of the eternal transcendence. And Krishna is all-pervading in many different ways. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagadavyakta murtinam. That's the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. I'm everywhere by my unmanifest form. He's everywhere by the Paramatma. God is within every atom, within everyone's heart. He's manifest in his energy. So, yes. Yeah.
Last question. Just a little bit doubt I had is about, you do some karma to fulfill your needs. As you said, we need basic needs, like air, shadow, and at the same time, we have to do nishkama karma yoga. So if you have to do some karma to fulfill your basic needs, can it still be considered an NKY?
Because if you're doing it for the ultimate purpose of pleasing the Supreme, like, why am I fulfilling my needs? Why am I keeping this body going? If your goal of life, certainly I have to breathe, and I have to eat and do everything else that, the normal people do. So if I'm doing that, the whole reason I'm doing that, the goal is to transcend, then that actually becomes, later on, we'll actually read a verse that talks about this. It says, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavya Brahmagno Brahmano Hutam Brahmatena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samadana. If one offers everything as a sacrifice, his breathing, his eating, and also there's Yat Karoshi Yadashnashi, that verse, then that sacrifice becomes, those activities become like the ghee offered into the fire. They become purified. They become Brahman. Anyway, a little technical there. Yes, just one more question.
Performing bhakti yoga, how much jnana yoga is needed, or is it needed at all?
It's not needed. There's no prerequisite of jnana for bhakti, although it can be utilized to help bhakti, but it's not needed. Now, of course, we need jnana. We don't need it. But we use jnana to keep ourselves steady in bhakti. But bhakti in and of itself is sufficient. Does that make sense? All right. All right. With that in mind, I just want to show the work of Jagat Guru before we end, of the new temple, which will be coming up very, very soon. He's done a fantastic job, and I'm really proud of him for this. Whoops. Let's see. I hope I can play it with this thing. Open with. Haven't tried it on this computer. That's the Windows Media Player. Let's try that. That should open it up. Here we go. Whoops. I guess not. Try one more time. Uh-oh. Well, we'll just show one of them. Nah, it's a disappointment. It's the only thing on this computer to show it with, I thought. Let's try it. What?
The QuickTime player up.
VLC. VLC will play it, yeah. QuickTime won't play it because it's missing something. Here we go. You get an idea what it looks like? Beautiful, is it?
Wow.
There's the pond at one end of the property. Pretty nice, isn't it?
That's going to be across the street.
That's going to be across the street. Excuse me? Yeah, handicap. There's an elevator between both floors. And both floors, as you see here, are at ground level. So a car could pull up to the entrance of either floor, even without taking the elevator, and people could go into the temple room or into the bottom floor, which has a prasadam room and auditorium. It's pretty nice, isn't it? And then he's just starting to do the inside movie. This is easy to show. Whoops. Let's use the same thing. Open with. Choose program. This is the foyer or the entrance to the temple. Is when you enter into the hall that's right before the temple room. And there's ramps, handicap ramps and everything, handicap elevator, handicap ramps. There's all sorts of facility for handicapped people. The plans for the temple, I mean, the plans are actually this thick, the whole, you know, all of them together. There's about several hundred plans done by architects and engineers. And they were submitted a few weeks ago to the city. And usually it takes about a month or two back and forth to get approval for them. And when they're approved, Krishna willing, and Lakshmi willing, Lakshmi Narayan willing, then we're going to be starting. So hopefully we can do groundbreaking by Gorpurnima. That's what we're hoping for. Once the plans get approved, we'll do the groundbreaking. We're talking about different alternatives. What we can do with this, whether we're going to do housing or yoga center or something like that. But there'll be plenty of facility in the new building for. There's plenty of classrooms there. There's a giant kitchen. The kitchen is practically as big as this whole room here. And there's an auditorium for plays. There's facility for everything. And there's a parikrama path in the new temple to go around the deity, so you don't have to go outside to do the parikrama. You go inside. And anyway, it's a very nice facility. Very nice facility. So I think we should end now because it's time for prasadam. We're going to take prasadam outside today. I guess it's warm enough. So, and also within the next few weeks, we're getting a new tarp. That means a new covering on the pavilion, which is going to be clear. Someone donated the money, you know, pledged to donate the money for the tarp. Some nice person pledged to donate the money for the tarp and also to repair the roof on the pavilion. So that's, Krishna's been very kind to us for that. You know, we prayed, and then someone came forward. So I guess that's it. All glories to His divine grace, to the Prabhupada, Ki Jai.